happy to announce that the Fretboard Journal now has three presenting sponsors. These are three brands that are behind us with everything that we do, including the podcasts and the videos, and they include Carter Vintage. Carter Vintage Guitars, where guitar lovers go for a good time. Gibson Guitars, only a Gibson is good enough. And last but not least, Martin Guitars. Martin Guitars and Strings remain the choice for musicians around the world for their unrivaled quality, craftsmanship, and tone. Can't thank these three brands enough for being presenting sponsors. Thank you, guys.
Listeners of the Fretboard Journal podcast, I'd like to welcome old friend, former collaborator, Mike Rigoni, who is a guy that I first got to know when living in Seattle. He was a really, really cool resource for me and a beacon of good musicianship at a time when I was trying to get my footing and figure out who was who in town. And Mike is a really inspiring guy. And I got to know him as a you know, overtly American style bluegrass kind of guy, incredible dobro player, incredible pedal steel player. But since we've last hung out, Mike has moved to Durham, North Carolina, and has since made a stylistic change into the ambient domain. And just thrilled to have him here. And this conversation is long overdue. I would like to welcome Mike Rigoni.
Hey, thanks, Ryan.
Yeah,
good to talk, man. Good to connect. Yeah.
So before we were interrupted just moments ago, but before we did, I was just asking you for a quick little view of how are things in Durham, and what are you up to these days there in Durham? What's keeping you busy?
Yeah. Life in Durham is great. We have been here since 2014. Having moved from Bellingham, Washington, where my family and I had been living for, I think we were there for about 5 years. And we've since spent about 5 years here in Durham. I'm doing a PhD in religion at Duke, and so that's why we made the move. And theoretically, I'm nearing the end of that. I've got another year, and then I should be done with that. But yeah, Durham's a great place to live, great food, great music, and just a really incredible city.
That's awesome.
Musically
speaking, do you get to stretch out these days in either the traditional stuff, or are there people also doing things that are more on the same stripe as what you're putting out currently?
The scene is so diverse. There's a lot of stuff happening. I'm not playing as much as I'd like, just given what I'm trying to do with writing and research. But there's so much great music happening here, in terms of singer-songwriters and Americana stuff. And I think there's like an ambient electronic music scene happening. I haven't really dug into it very much, but the scene is really diverse. Yeah, there's a lot of music here.
That's good. It's good to know.
Yeah.
This is definitely potentially some deep water, but the thought occurs to me that to might as well ask since we just kind of went over it. But your current work, I'm assuming you're spending a lot of time, you know, like you said, researching and writing. And is there any overlap with what your religious studies and or is there any overlap between religious studies and music for you, in terms of what you're able to write about or theorize on?
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Let me think about that. I mean, I wrote a little piece on this album that just came out that I did called Mount Carmel, where I kind of talk about how the method that I'm using for my academic work, which is called ethnography, has some similarities with how I think about recording. So there's a little bit of overlap there. The idea being that ethnography is this method that that cultural anthropologists develop to research ways of life and research cultures, and it involves hanging out with people for lengthy period of time and writing about your experiences with them. Mm. And the whole idea is that over time, as you write and spend time with a community, you come to develop insight about what you're trying to study. And I think there's something similar with the recording process, especially when you're recording alone and you're layering track upon track. And it's kind of that process of layering tracks that's something bigger than an individual track kind of emerges into a piece of music. I think there might be some similarities there. I try to write about it a little bit for the statement on Mount Carmel. Mm-hmm. So if there's any overlap, it might be there with the method I'm kind of using for my research and the way I approach recording.
Sure.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. What do you think? Does it sound?
No, I mean, you know,
I'm far-fetched.
It doesn't really, because I do my own musical adventures too. And I know that the revelation and editorial process are often very much one and the same. Like I don't feel like I really know what I'm doing often until I've taken 80% of what I recorded away.
Right.
But you got to get to know that 80% to know that it's, you know, it's not, you know, super critical to the message you're trying to send. So,
yeah.
In that way, I you know, I totally, I'm with it. I'm right on board. And so this is, for those of our listeners who may dabble in this, genre, I guess it would be, your newest record, Mount Carmel, is coming out on the 12K label, which is, operated by Ambient, Luminary, Taylor Dupree.
And
you know, yeah. God bless him for having this label, for putting this stuff out and staying the course, I guess. But I'm curious, how did you guys pick up? And this is your second record for them?
This is my first with them. And it came out just 2 weeks ago. It came out on May 10th. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's my first record with 12K. And yeah, Taylor is just such an amazing guy. He's been running the label for two decades now. Mm. And it's really fascinating to sit with the catalog and see how it's kind of the sensibility of the label has changed over time. And I love the releases that have come out the past, you know, 5 to 7 years. Just kind of the attention to space and the use of acoustic instruments and not just electronic instruments. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just a really, really fascinating label with deep history. The way we connected was, he had tweeted, it all comes back to Twitter.
Always.
But always. He had tweeted about this little EP I put out called Still Lifes, and I noticed that, and I was like, who is this guy Taylor Dupree. And so I did some research and then, you know, found out about the label and spent some time listening to the catalog. And then I realized that he had tweeted about this album I had put out like a year earlier called Field Notes. Mm. And I had actually retweeted that tweet, but I didn't do the research to find out who this guy was. So it's kind of ridiculous, but yeah. So I ended up shooting him an email and, just let him know about my, interest in the label, and it kind of all emerged out of that.
Great.
And, he invited me to think about maybe putting something together for the label, and that's Mount Carmel.
So cool. I like the initial, non-response to the tweet. You're playing hard to get.
Right. I'm just not doing my research, which is not smart. Yeah.
Worked out for you.
So
now, you know, speaking of the record and also of the process, what is it? I mean, I have a guess, but I'm more sort of wanting a glimpse into the timeline of even song to song. Like this is such kind of painterly music in that you are, mm-hmm. you know, reassembling colors and textures that you've recorded into the box.
Right.
Do you set limitations, or was this a body? So when he said, "Hey man, would you prefer to, or would you be interested in putting something together for the label?" Was this material that you had brewing, or once he showed that interest, did that inspire a new batch of work? And if so, how long does it take for you to crank out a record like this?
Yeah. That's a really interesting question. So the record clocks in at around 45 minutes, I think. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of the longest thing I've ever put together. What I ended up doing was I sent him a really atmospheric piece that I already had sitting on my hard drive that I'd recorded probably a couple of years prior. So I sent that to him, and it was like a lot of lap steel and harmonics. And I actually think it's kind of like the bed of the second track on the record, which is also called Mount Carmel. And his response was that he liked the track, but that he wanted to hear an instrument foregrounded in the mix, that he wasn't really interested in just something that was totally amorphous, but something that had a little more kind of like acoustic texture. Mm. So I went back to that track and started messing around with my dobro. And so I put that stuff kind of on top of this more sort of amorphous bed of lap steel, swells and things like that. And then I sent that to Taylor, and he was like, "Yeah, this is the direction I think you should go." So once we kind of got that figured out, then I kind of dug into it, and I did the recording last summer, and a lot of it is new stuff, but I did use the same technique for that track I just described. I ended up pulling from some sessions that were just kind of sitting on my hard drive to get some more of that kind of amorphous lap steel, pedal steel kind of ambient beds upon which I could layer stuff that would sit in the front of the mix more so. So I used some pre-existing material and then for some of the tracks, but then for probably the other half, I built it from the ground up.
Thanks for breaking that down. So, you know, I've been familiar with the stuff that you've been doing. And it seems like it's been, you know, you've been recording it on your own for as long as I've known you. I will say though, that this sound, the fidelity of this is a definite step up, and, you know, nothing against the previous stuff, but this is a really full bodied, well mixed. I'm assuming that he has a mastering guy that beefs it up a little bit more if needed. And I'm just curious, man, gear wise, is there anything new, or is it, or, I mean, well, I guess people don't know what's new anyway. Yeah. So just tell us what you use.
Sure. Yeah. You know, my setup is very, minimalist, probably somewhat primitive compared to, other folks, but I used an Audient Miko, as the, I guess I use the pre's and the Audient Miko and the converters and the Miko, and then went from that into Pro Tools. Mm. And I did some of the stuff direct, you know, with Lap Steel and Pedal Steel, some of the stuff, combined, signal from an amp and direct, a direct feed. And then in terms of like, even some of the Dobro I did direct because I liked, kind of the thinness of the direct tone of the Dobro against some of those, kind of warmer ambient beds, that I created with the Lapstone Pedal Steel. But then I, you know, in other cases I would mic the Dobro as well and use that signal rather than the direct signal. But it's a lot of like, I mean, those were all my options, but I would just kind of make calls in the recording process. Like, I think I'm just going to try this and see,
sure,
see if this works.
Sure.
Maybe I should mic it, but let me just go direct. And then I did some vocal stuff, but I used the Dobro itself as the microphone.
Oh,
so
great.
I would actually like sing or do something, you know, with my voice into the resonator itself, and then, you know, kind of mix that in somehow. I think like you could even hear my dog barking at some point, you know, as a result of like barking and the Dobro capturing that sound.
Sure.
So, yeah.
Now for those who have yet to listen, even though you just gave a really detailed breakdown of the process, it's still going to sound, I think people might be surprised by how, you know, synthy it is. And I'm personally curious, as a recordist and tinkerer myself, like you get all the source material, and then are you still, so you're in Pro Tools and do you have any new fancy, reverb engines or, you know, I mean, feel free to not give us the secret recipe if it's classified.
No, it's totally fine. Yeah, no, in terms of some of the synthy sounds, I, you know, this pedal, and everyone has it. It's the Line 6. It's the big green thing with loop.
DL4.
The DL4. It has that loop function. I really love that pedal because, you know, I use the that button that will either lower the recorded loop down a whole step or up a whole step. Mm-hmm. And you'll hear some of that in the second track where there's this Dobro line that, like, you know, while I was recording it using the DL4, I would just kind of hit that button in order to you know, speed up the loop or slow it back down. I think I did that with some of the vocal stuff too. Like you'll hear something that sounds like a voice, but then, and it is my voice, but then I use the, that button on the DL4 to lower it an octave and maybe flip between those two settings. So then it sounds like, oh, maybe that isn't a vocal track, but that's actually like a synth. And he's, you know, hitting a key an octave below. But no, it's everything is coming out of those three instruments: lap steel, pedal steel, Dobro. And then there's live manipulation while I'm recording using the DL4.
Sure.
So again, it's like a pretty simple setup.
Yeah.
But it, I don't know. Like, I think that's just, it works for me. You know, like I have a couple of other pedals I don't think I really even use very often. Maybe I use the Boss Digital Play. But that DL4, man, you can do a lot of interesting things just with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, so, I mean, that is, it's a really great, simple, recording setup. It makes me wonder, have you tried to perform this music live? And if so, would you be using a similar, similar bag of tricks?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And that's one I'm starting to wrestle with. Like, you know, if I had more time, like if I wasn't working on this dissertation, I would try to figure out as a next step how to perform this stuff and try to do like a CD release gig or something like that.
Yeah.
So to answer your question, no, I haven't, just because I'm writing the dissertation. But yeah, I don't quite know. I'd have to sit down. I don't think the DL4 would cut it live. Like to perform this music, I'd probably have to have some stuff, some tracks within each piece, like sure. loaded up, ready to go.
Sure.
But that is, yeah, that is kind of like, I don't know if it's the final frontier, but that it definitely feels like it right now.
Yeah.
Like I'd like to explore that and see, so maybe next year at some point.
When do you, I know it's probably hard to say, but when do you, what do you have a goal for being complete with your dissertation?
Yeah. Currently the money runs out in the spring of 2020. So I am planning on defending, next spring. So about a year from now.
Okay.
So that's
all right. Well, so I guess what that means for the rest of the world is fall 2020, we get to see some shows.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I'd like to do that. I need to figure out how to weave that.
Yeah.
Weave the live thing in.
Absolutely.
But yeah, that is totally part of the goal here. Yeah.
And you know, one thing that we should touch on for sure, because people want to know, that's why they love the Fretboard Journal, is what gear are you working with specifically instrument wise?
Yeah. So, on the Dobro end, I have a Shearhorn, resonator guitar that I bought a long time ago, when they were much more inexpensive. I actually don't know if Tim Shearhorn is still taking custom orders for Dobros, but, I got that Dobro in like 2003 or something like that. So it's, maple body, it has F holes. It's just like the best Dobro ever. But I also have a really old, Dobro brand Dobro that I used, on certain tracks as well. So I have those two Dobros. I have a Magnetone lap steel and a Carter pedal steel, which I'm going to swap out soon for, I'd like to get a Williams steel guitar, but yeah. So just that pedal steel and that lap steel, they've been really great. I've gigged live with them in the past and really great instruments.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Amp-wise?
Oh, amp-wise, I have a Fender Blues Deluxe, which I kind of acquired over the years. And I know that's probably not like an orthodox choice for the pedal steel player, but I think it sounds great.
Yeah, man.
That was my son walking by.
They get plenty loud.
Yeah.
They do the trick. Absolutely. Well, dude, I love it. Yeah. I mean, I love it. It's kind of, I mean, you know, the Shearhorn is big ticket. The Magnetone is big ticket. Obviously nothing cooler than an old Dobro, but I mean, personally, it brings a smile to my face because it's the same exact gear that you've had ever since I've known you.
I know.
And I love that. I love that. There's just something really cool.
Yeah. Means I haven't made much money over the years.
I should definitely, take a page from that playbook for sure.
Yeah. I mean, It seems like, yeah, I mean, I was really flattered when Taylor Dupree tweeted about the albums, and like, I, you know, and then when I learned more about the label, I was just totally floored by it. But yeah, I mean, it just seems like if you have some decent software and plugins, and mics and stuff, it's really, yeah, maybe it just really comes down to the composition and the mixing and the performance and stuff. I don't know.
Yeah, no, you got it. You figured it out. You do know.
Right.
Proof is.
But I'm gonna swap out the Carter pedal steel for. I'm kind of drooling over this Williams.
Is there one in town that you've got your eye on?
No, not in particular. But I did call the guys. I think they're up in Minnesota or something like that. But yeah, I mean they're great. They you know take your call and answer all your questions and. Yeah, it's just, yeah, I would really love to have a really nice pedal steel guitar, so.
Yeah. Well, dude, I look forward to you getting it because it's, you know, if you can get as good as you've gotten on the Carter, which I had one and.
Right.
They're a great tool, but I mean, yeah, you deserve something more substantial. The time has come.
Yeah. Yeah.
So now I you know, people, I'm definitely planning on linking people to the Bandcamp page, but give us a little bit of a condensed statement in terms of, you know, like origin story for why this record is called Mount Carmel and, you know, anything that goes along with that.
Sure. Yeah, for sure. So I wanted to, you know, and I think like the, experience of recording these albums earlier, one of them in particular kind of lent to this, philosophy for recording, but I kind of wanted to ground the pieces in a sense of place. And, I thought it would be neat to try to think about the landscape in which I grew up in Southern California as a way of kind of orienting the record. So I grew up in Los Peñasquitos, California, which is inland San Diego. Mm-hmm. And I grew up in this really, it's really incredible small neighborhood of just two streets. That are kind of nestled between these hills. It's this place called the Black Mountain Reserve or Park or something like that. It was just really, really nice place to grow up, really wonderful neighborhood. And as I was kind of thinking about and reflecting on what it was like to grow up there, I started remembering, you know, the Santa Ana winds and kind of stuff about our yard and hiking those hills in the preserve there. And then I wanted to kind of bring some of that feeling to the record. And there's a church at the bottom of the two streets called Our Lady of Mount Carmel. It's a Catholic church. And that's where I went to church growing up. And I just kind of imagined that whole space as Mount Carmel, right, because of the church and these hills that felt like mountains to me as a kid. And there's just something about the landscape. It's so dry and hot and kind of opposite of the Pacific Northwest, obviously, where I lived for quite a long time after that. So I kind of wanted to conjure that sense, that landscape. And I know it's hard to kind of represent these sorts of things in music, but it served as kind of like a way of orienting the music as I recorded it for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, and I grew up, you know, a couple miles to the west of that, closer to the coast. And so next time I'm down there, I'll definitely make sure to put that in headphones and take a walk and see.
Sweet.
let it ride, you know, because I have tons of experience. You know, I mean, admittedly a little bit less, naturalistically, my friends and I utilized the Black Mountain area to have keg parties because there was nothing there.
Right. Oh, no kidding.
And now it's a completely different reality there, but, I'm down there a good bit and I, like I said, I'll put it in the cans and take a walk out in East San Diego next time I'm there.
Oh, very cool. Yeah, that sounds great.
What are you, you know, taking a little bit of a turn here. What have you been listening to these days?
Yeah, you know, being down here in the South has and in Durham in particular, has been really great for being exposed to new artists. I, you know, in terms of artists here in town, like, I've really been into His Golden Messenger, which is like MC Taylor's project. Mm-hmm. I think there's something really incredible about his songwriting and kind of the production, the approach to production that they're taking with those records. It's really beautiful stuff. I mean, I'm just really, that's kind of become a mainstay for me. You know, living here in Durham and reflecting on the South and what's going on, politically, you know, here in the South and more broadly in the country. And his, I don't know, his music really has been, I don't know, helpful. That's not quite right, but I don't know. It's been great to listen to. Phil Cook's stuff has been really great as well. And I think Phil is playing all over his Golden Messenger records as well. Mm. So that's been really, really nice to kind of hang out in his catalog. Yeah. And then, I mean, you know, I've been hanging out with 12K stuff quite a bit and kind of digging into that ambient universe as well. So there's, you know, it's been some neat discoveries there. No, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. What I was going to ask is going to be a different way of going, but.
Oh, okay. The other singer songwriter that has kind of captured me recently is Mark Kozelak.
Oh yeah.
And especially his live records. Like, I just discovered those, I don't know, half a year ago, but there's something about his live records that are really incredible on a number of different levels, just like his performances, kind of the spareness of instrumentation, and you can hear the space of the venue as he performs, but also the banter that he has with the audience members. It's just like really, you know, I think maybe, you know, I'm trying to make immersive music with my stuff. There's something really immersive about his live shows that I really enjoy. So I've been listening to those a lot too.
Great. Yeah, I never that's a name that's been repeatedly suggested to me, and for whatever reason I just haven't pulled the trigger on it yet, but I'm going to load up some Mark Kozelak after we're done talking here. And is there a live record specifically that I should check out? You think you have a favorite?
Yeah. Let me, what's the name of it? I have to pull it up. I mean, they're all, he's got a lot.
Cool. Yeah.
But there's one in particular that's
all right. Cool, man.
Yeah.
Do you get to, you know, when you're at home, With a down minute, do you ever pick up the dobro and go through some of the kind of traditional real bluegrass fiddle tune vocab that you have, or is that stuff kind of in a different life?
Dying on the vine. a little bit. I mean, a little bit. I haven't been playing bluegrass that much, but there's a jam will pop up on occasion that I'll get invited to. If I can get away, I'll run over play some fiddle tunes and, you know, in someone's living room. So on occasion, I'll pull that out. I can still play some of those tunes. That Kozelek record is that I really like, live at Phoenix Public House, Melbourne.
Okay.
So
I got it.
There's some awesome stuff on there. Yeah.
Great, dude.
Yeah.
Well, my friend, what are you doing for the rest of this holiday? Is there hot dogs on the grill?
Man, I wish. I think I'm gonna make some fish tacos for the family.
There you go.
And try to finish this book for a paper I'm writing. So that's about it. But I mean, weather's great. My daughter's out swimming somewhere. Yeah.
Perfect.
Life is pretty good. Yeah.
Good for you, dude.
Yeah.
Well,
thanks, man. Yeah.
Yeah. This has truly been long overdue, and I'm just so stoked on your latest record, and I hope that everyone that hears this follows suit and goes to Bandcamp and listens and subsequently buys it, because it's worth it. And for anyone that liked, I mean, the you know, you can swing the ambient paddle any which way, but I think if anyone out there listens to Daniel Lanois and loved his record Goodbye to Language, this is going to be, you know, a nice companion to that. So if that's inspiring to anyone, jump in, because it's well worth it. But man, thanks so much for taking the time.
Yeah, thank you, Ryan.
And
that's great.
Yeah.
Happy
holidays, and yeah, we're stoked to help you out, dude.
Hey, thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Of course. We will talk to you soon, and thanks for everyone for listening.
All right. See ya. Thanks. Bye.